Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me Saints drafted you, and they looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk to the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Typical Knicks, man. I knew it. They get close. They tease us. Then they wouldn't get it done. Ow! 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 I know the Knicks were denying it. I know the Knicks had everybody believing that if they got the number one overall pick, they were going to hold on to Zion. But I'm here to tell you, no matter what they tell anybody, they were thinking about moving that pick for Anthony Davis. They were at least thinking about it. Now New Orleans gets the first damn pick, and then they got both gone. What did the Knicks have? What did the Knicks have?
As someone checked on Screamin' A today, it's been more than 24 hours since the New Orleans Pelicans were awarded the top overall pick in this year's NBA draft by winning the lottery.
I told you he was mad.
And national media have spent a good portion of the last 24 hours constructing made-up stories and expressing their dismay.
Now they got both guys. Why do the Knicks have?
And expressing their anger, rage, frustration. You haven't seen this much anger and frustration from people on this type of level since about, I don't know.
I think since maybe Livestrong got called out.
Or since about 4 days ago when Game of Thrones fans are now starting a petition to have HBO redo the whole last season. Because they're unhappy with the direction of the show.
This is what Vince McMahon's talking about. Entitled fans.
Entitled fans, entitled media, still upset about the Pelicans getting the number one.
I couldn't tell.
Number one overall pick in this year's draft. Welcome to this edition of RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III. The man chalked full with laughter this morning is Cody Schutz, as he should be. And we're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also catch us on 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. We do have a jam-packed show for you today. Coming up here in the first hour, John Marques from the Town Talk and thetowntalk.com is going to be joining us to talk Pelicans earning the top draft pick, as well as some LSU baseball discussion. We'll also lead off then the second hour with a conversation I was able to have the other day with UL's superstar pitcher, the Sun Belt Conference Pitcher of the Year, former Turlings Catholic star, Summer Ellison. The Raging Cajuns are, of course, playing at the Oxford Regional starting tomorrow, so we're able to get a conversation in with Summer Ellison. We'll also talk to James Yasko, the co-host of the Lima Time Time podcast. Astros rolled up yet another win, sweeping the series away from the Detroit Tigers. Justin Verlander was magnificent. He's very much in Cy Young form this season. We'll talk to James about Verlander and the Astros. Third hour, back-to-back, we got Les East, our good friend from Crescent City Sports. He's going to give us his insight on the Pels getting the number one overall draft pick, as well as any updated Saints news. And hopefully, with our fingers crossed, our good friend Nick Suss will be joining us again at 8:32. He covers Ole Miss athletics, both baseball and softball. He's going to give us a little bit of taste of what the Ole Miss Rebel softball program brings to the table, a likely opponent if the UL Raging Cajuns want to win the Oxford Regional. So we got, like I said, a jam-packed day, but we want to start with Pelicans. And now Screamin' A's response was amusing, and he is a diehard New York Knicks fan. So he let his fandom run amok despite being a professional and the highest paid person on the four-letter network. But it just wasn't Knicks fandom run amok with Stephen A. Smith. Have you noticed in the last 24 hours plus since new vice president of basketball operations David Griffin and head coach Alvin Gentry were awarded the top overall pick, which will likely be Zion Williamson? Boy, the national media did not waste any time jumping on creating this storyline that Zion Williamson will, in fact, not be coming to the New Orleans Pelicans. Almost immediately, it was as if they thought, how can we generate a story out of thin air? Brian Windhorst of the Four Letter Network says, you know, it's not a done deal because since Zion doesn't have an agent, he can go back to school. That's
almost as funny as what Stephen A. said.
And then they have a discussion. And I'll give up to Richard Jefferson, former, a very long-time, well-respected veteran player who was sitting there on the panel when Windhorst does this. And Jefferson just does like this eye roll. He just kind of tilts his head and just rolls his eyes. It's like, really? For real? Y'all really going to do this right now?
That's the take we're going with, huh?
This is the take we're going with? This is the take we're going with? Yeah, it's...
If he was on Around the Horn, he'd have got muted.
We're not going to let New Orleans have anything nice, just not even for a minute, because it began almost like within the hour. This crap began with, well, you know, Zion doesn't have an agent, and did you see his reaction? You know, it doesn't thrill. You know, the people are telling me. Sources are telling me. That's why I love my favorite. My favorite is, sources have told me. Sources are telling me. You mean someone sent you a text message or you saw something on Instagram? That's what sources have come down to for these quote-unquote reporters. Sorry, the old-time print media guy in me just gets so angry with my sources.
Your confidential informant,
yeah.
as it were.
Yeah.
And let's play with this scenario for a second, Wendy, there. Don't forget, he's like LeBron James' best friend. So, you know, he's got something going for
ESPN
him.
ESPN hired him specifically
just to follow LeBron James
because
around.
Of his relationship, just to follow LeBron James
it's
around.
That's great. That's amazing.
So I'm sure that has nothing.
LeBron James creating jobs everywhere. But him coming in there and saying that is, it's not as if Zion, if he goes back to college, Anthony Davis then leaves wherever he goes. The Pelicans are now the worst team in the NBA. They're not going to get any better. They're going to be right there again. So unless they're planning on making sure they don't botch the rigging of the lottery next time around, Zion would have just as big of a chance to end up in New Orleans if he went back to Duke for another year anyway.
It reminds me,
you said, it's out of thin air. It's just talking just to talk. And, hey, that's our thing. Can't steal our thing. We talk just to talk.
It reminds me of, remember when his shoe blew up?
Yeah. Nike hid in like the mountains for a couple of weeks. They're like, we don't exist. What are you talking about? We don't make shoes.
His shoe just blew up and he was injured for a little while. And then the whole narrative, remember, all of a sudden the story came out. You know, Zion Williamson's going to shut it down. People in Zion's camp are debating on shutting it down for the year and not coming back.
You can blame the Boses and Leonard Fournette for that one.
But what happened?
He came back.
That's right. He came back and he played for Coach K. Now, he may have never been to New Orleans. That may be true. He may not be thrilled about going to a franchise that's not as glamorous as, say, the Knicks or the Lakers.
But they will plaster your face on the side of the building.
Anthony Davis is one of the biggest stars in the league. And he's played in New Orleans his entire career. Right? And he's got a damn unibrow. Okay? Yet he's a huge star. One of the biggest stars in this league. One of the top 10, maybe even top 5 stars in the association.
And he's not even really out there as much as you would think a top 5 guy in the NBA is. He's more chill than most.
And Zion Williamson has become a bit of a sports cultural phenomenon. Yeah. So they're saying that he's the most talented, unique prospect to come out in the draft since LeBron James.
Again, he shut a shoe company down for like 2 weeks.
Yes.
If my shoes blow out, they're going to be like, ha, go buy more.
And this is 2019. Like, that's the other thing. I said it the other day on the radio. It does not matter. You don't need to go play in L.A. and New York like you used to for all sports. That was the big move that you made. That's why Reggie Jackson left Oakland and went to go play for the Yankees. Okay, he wanted to win. He already won World Series championship, but he wanted to win more, and he wanted to be in New York. Because if you were in New York, you had Madison Avenue, you got all the advertising revenue, you became a star, you could go to clubs, Studio 54, the whole nine yards. Okay, so, or you go to L.A. in the 80s and the 90s, and you could go hang out with the movie stars. Okay. To build up your name and can be seen at parties when, you know, oh, look who was spotted at, you know, the
new Showtime over there, man.
Right. That's not the world we live in. Everyone has the capabilities of making themselves a celebrity now. I have a phone. I just go, hey, what up, world? RP3 here.
World star.
What's up? I just had a sausage biscuit. It was awesome. Like my page. Okay? That's the world we live in. So we don't need to live in New York or L.A. to be a star. Look at Russell Westbrook. The man has his own fashion line, a very successful fashion line, and he plays in Oklahoma. He plays in a part of the United States that the federal government at one time deemed so unlivable that they forced people to go there by military force. And yet, Russell Westbrook...
I need to brush up on my American history.
And yet, Russell Westbrook finds a way to be a huge star in the NBA and in sports in general.
While still kind of being a complainer. So that's even more proof because, I mean, he's not exactly the most likable guy, Russell Westbrook, and he's still doing it for himself. So it goes to show you, I mean, it's not the – and, I mean, if you want to talk movies, I can maybe trigger a few people, but, I mean, there are, you know, not as many – the difference in the number of movies and things and TV shows and whatnot filmed in Hollywood – and then filmed in Louisiana, that difference is not as big as you would think.
That is correct. And if you want to talk
there about... There are more in Hollywood. Don't get it twisted. There are more done in Hollywood, and in that, but the difference isn't as big as you would expect.
Correct. It's not that different. So this whole narrative that you have to be there, no. Would Coach K welcome Zion Williamson back with open arms? Of course he would.
He would know what to do with him.
You're like, what? You're coming back?
Huh?
It would be unprecedented. Unprecedented, but all the whining by national media, these reports of these sources and these storylines of, well, you know, not so fast, he could go back to Duke. And then guys like Colin, who goes on to this whole thing on his show yesterday about... That's what he should do. That the Pelicans are, you know, you don't want to waste your career there with the Pelicans. Like, I'm just like, did everyone forget that the Pels swept the Portland Trailblazers in the opening round of the NBA playoffs last year? When the Trailblazers were the 3 seed and then took a game from Golden State Warriors in the second round. This was a playoff team. A year ago. And the management that was in place before that did things poorly, is a nice way of describing it, has been ousted. And Gail Benson, the queen, as the Saints players referred to her as, is dedicated to making a winner. And they hired David Griffin. Do none of these national people realize that David Griffin is a phenomenal hire, one of the best hires any front office has made in years? And that this man is committed to winning, and he knows how to build a winner, and he's a champion himself because he helped bring a championship to Cleveland? But that doesn't fit the narrative. They want you to click. Oh, the clickbait. The clickbait and the hot takes. Oh, it's so hot.
Well, it's like
it's so hot. Ooh, you know what I'm going to come up with? Oh, the number one overall pick shouldn't go to that city. Oh, yeah, ooh, look you. At me. I am so hot.
It's like when someone tries to tell me, well, I don't think the Oakland Athletics are going to win the World Series this year. Well, okay, you got a 30 out of 31 shot for that or whatever it is. Give me the team that's going to win. You know, I mean, the boring thing to say is, oh, Zion's going to go to New Orleans and then look ahead and see. That's boring because that's the obvious thing. That's what's going to happen. So everybody's out here trying to tell you, you know, some craziness. And it's like, no, give me real. Give me what I, but hey, like Batista says, give me what I want.
It's all like this, just this hot take garbage. It's just like, you know.
I mean, it works. It's entertaining, but you have to watch it in the right way. You have to, like when I watch wrestling, I don't sit there and be like, oh man, that guy's, oh no, and this, and oh, look at that. And, no, I watch wrestling understanding what I'm watching. This Stephen A. Smith rant is hilarious. If you understand, he probably wrote that in like the notes on his iPhone before he did it. You know what I mean? It's like, none of that is off the cuff. None of that is actual. You know, it's. You got to take it all with a grain of salt. These people know what they're doing. You don't get millions of followers like that for no reason.
So, yes. Pels fans, ignore the whiny hot take artist. It will pass just like everything else.
They're all jabronis.
There it is. We'll keep the NBA discussion going along. Eastern Conference Finals began last night. Bucks. Woo! Giannis looked good last night. We'll talk more about it right here on 103.7 The Game.
Now to Giannis, double teamed. Giannis dribbles out of it. Giannis down the lane, gallops to the rim, put it in! Double clutch and a 3-point Bucks lead. 98-95.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also catch us on 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. Started off the program talking national media hot take artist / crybabies, talking about how dare the New Orleans Pelicans get the number one overall pick. That belongs to the New York Knicks, Los Angeles Lakers. It's not fair. What's going on? Newsflash. Believe it or not, the sports world does not revolve around what occurs in New York City and Los Angeles. Stunning development, I know, breaking news. Eastern Conference Finals were also last night, as everyone was still crying in their beer about what occurred during the NBA draft lottery the night before. Milwaukee Bucks, Toronto Raptors, the two best teams in the East, are meeting in the conference finals. And it was a bit of an interesting game because Toronto went out, got on top early. After one quarter, they led 34-23. They appeared to be in control on the road there in Milwaukee. But then the fear of the deer just took over. Just took over. The Raptors went extremely cold in the fourth quarter. Not a single player scored from the field in the fourth quarter except Kyle Lowry. For the Toronto Raptors. Everyone else went 0 for 14. Not going to win many ball games if you only have one player scoring you points and everyone else is hitting bricks. But the Bucks, Nico Maricek, remember him? He played for the Pels. Just a reminder, Dell Demps traded a first-round pick to get him and then traded him away for a second-round pick. That's why Dale Demps is unemployed today. He chipped in 13 for the Bucks. The Greek Freak had a nice game, 24 points, 14 boards. Chris Middleton, who's been an underrated player for the Bucks all season long, he had a double-double, 11 rebounds, 11 points. But who had, here's a name that you didn't expect to hear during this postseason, Brooke Lopez. Brooke Lopez led the Milwaukee Bucks with 29 points. Raise your hand if you knew Brooke Lopez was on the Milwaukee Bucks roster. No, you did not know that, I assure you. And who the hell knew that Brooke Lopez could still play at that level? But he came up big, played 35 minutes, shot 12 of 21 from the field, and helped. Even shot a clutch three-pointer late. The big fella out there shooting threes. The Raptors, meanwhile, were paced by Kawhi Leonard, who had 31 points, but he shot 10 of 26 from the field. Kyle Lowry had 30 points. He was 10 of 15 from the field. But like I said, the Raptors were nowhere to be found in the fourth quarter as the rest of the team went cold and the Bucks pulled out a 108-100 victory. And that's the thing, when you have a team on the ropes, and the Raptors had the Bucks on the ropes, they're in their place, they have a lead, and then you let them off the hook because you have a terrible quarter of basketball. That's tough. That's tough to bounce back from. And you let a guy like Brooke Lopez score 13 of his career playoff high 29 points in the fourth quarter alone. The Bucks closed out the game on a 10-0 run. Despite your woes of shooting from the field, the Raptors were still leading this game. And then the Bucks closed it out with a 10-0 run. Love the grit that the Bucks showed last night. Boy, it sure does feel like they're going to be moving on, even though Toronto may make this a series yet. Conference finals are in full swing. Both game ones are in the books now. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we're going to talk Pelicans. We're going to talk a little LSU baseball with our good friend John Marques from The Town Talk and thetowntalk.com. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also catch us on 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. We led off the show talking about national media from the four-letter network, generating stories that Zion Williamson does not have to come to New Orleans, that he will, in fact, return to Duke, or, better yet, hot takes of that he shouldn't go to New Orleans. And then we touched a little bit on the Eastern Conference Finals Game 1 with the Milwaukee Bucks, ending that game on a 10-0 run to claim the first game against the Toronto Raptors. We're going to talk a little bit more about the Pels and the reaction to the Pels winning the NBA lottery with our next guest as we head out to the Arco Equipment Hotline and welcome on the Town Talk and thetowntalk.com's senior sports columnist, our good friend, John Marques. John, how are you this morning, brother?
Doing well, Ray. How about you?
Doing well. So let's start off with what occurred the other night. Everyone felt like it was a foregone conclusion that the top pick was going to be going to the New York Knicks. They even had Patrick Ewing in the house for the draft lottery event held in Chicago. It looked like it was going to be the Knicks or the Cavs or the Lakers or the Phoenix Suns, someone like that. It ends up being the Pels and the Grizzlies that get the number one and number two overall picks, the two least valuable franchises by Forbes in the association. Your thoughts on what occurred the other night in Chicago?
Well, I guess it blows the smith of rings that the NBA fixes the lottery each year. Because why would you give the Pelicans or the Grizzlies the number one pick? But, I mean, if you're a Pelicans fan, you have hope. I mean, you haven't had hope since, you know, let's face it, since, what, DeMarcus Cousins went down with an injury a year and a half ago. So, and the even better is you got a GM who's competent and knows what to do with it. And, you know, I mean, I don't think anybody would have been surprised if the Pelicans had ended up with the number one pick, whether it was through a trade for Anthony Davis, excuse me, or what have you. But the fact that you have the number one pick and you still have Anthony Davis on your roster, I mean, it's just, I mean, there's just a world of opportunities now for David Griffin as he moves forward on trying to retool the franchise.
John, with Griffin's experience working his way up through the Phoenix Suns organization during a time period where they emerged as one of the better teams in the Western Conference, building up through the draft, as well as being smart with free agent signees. I'm thinking of Steve Nash, getting him away from the Dallas Mavericks and having Stoudemire. And then he goes over to Cleveland, works his way up as well, and he becomes the architect of building that team that went to three straight NBA finals. One of the first things he does, besides getting LeBron James to come back, is that he trades the pick that they have in Andrew Wiggins to the Minnesota Timberwolves to get a scoring double-double wing player that helps them win a championship in Kevin Love. We know he's going to keep the number one overall pick, but what do you expect him to do with Anthony Davis? Do you expect him to get a couple of actual starters and players in return and picks? What do you think he's going to try to do here?
You know, that's the interesting question is, do you roll the dice and keep Anthony Davis at least up and through January? Let him play with Zion Williams. Let him form a great, lethal pick-and-roll combo with Jrue Holiday also. I mean, that's a pretty strong trio to build around. I mean, I would take that over what the Rockets have. I would take it over just about any team in the West outside of Golden State. Do you roll the dice that, all right, let's Anthony Davis, if he really wants to win and Zion's going to help us win, you know, if you go to Los Angeles, you're not getting that. If you go to the Knicks, you're not getting that. If you go to the Celtics, who knows what you're getting with Kyrie apparently on his way out. Those are the three likely trading partners right now, are the Lakers, the Knicks, and the Celtics. You don't have a better situation than what you potentially have now in New Orleans. Plus, you know, you don't know who David Griffin might bring in free agency. That adds another wild card to it. Do you roll the dice? Let's see where we are in January, and if we're battling for one of the top four seeds in the West, if not higher, do you keep Davis, convince him that, hey, yeah, I can win here? That, I mean, that's the reason he wanted out, was he wanted to go somewhere where he could win. Well, if you now give him that in New Orleans, that takes that out of the equation. And if he doesn't like it, it doesn't work, you can still try to trade him at the February trading deadline. That being said, I do expect Anthony Davis to probably be shipped out, probably. And if you don't see him sign a max contract in July, I think it's definitely likely he's going to be traded. You know, but that does give Griffin, you know, he gives him all the months of June, you know, the last week in May to try to convince him to stick around in New Orleans. We'll see what happens.
We're talking with John Marques. He's a senior sports columnist for the Town Talk and thetowntalk.com. John, I'm like you. I think he gets traded. Reports have come out, actual reporting, just not hot takes, that he still wants to be traded. And despite the amount of respect that David Griffin has with Clutch Sports and Team LeBron, because we know how highly regarded LeBron and his camp feel about Griffin, that's one of the reasons why he left Cleveland after
Griffin got fired.
After Griffin got fired for winning a championship. Of the likely trade scenarios that we know of, we know the Lakers are probably still going to be interested. Even though I like Brandon Ingram and I think he has upside and just hasn't been developed, and I've made this argument before, John. We'll start with the Lakers. We'll talk about Lakers, Celtics, and the Knicks and what they can offer. the Lakers, I know everyone says they're a bunch of guys that LeBron can't play with, but I have a couple points there. One, Rodney Hood and George Hill were guys that LeBron couldn't play with last season, and yet we see them making huge contributions for playoff teams right now. Secondly, the Lakers also thought that D'Angelo Russell was hot garbage, and now he's an all-star for Brooklyn and led them to the playoffs. And, you know, and they also thought Julius Randle wasn't worth re-signing, and we saw how good he was for the Pels. So the Lakers situation, who they can offer up, are we undervaluing them based because the Lakers have been such a dumpster fire? Could they possibly actually be good players if they just don't play for the Lakers?
Yeah, that's definitely a possibility, you know, but the Lakers also thought, you know, Ball was going to be a better prospect or point guard NBA player than De'Aaron Fox. I think, yeah. we know, and please don't bring that dumpster fire to New Orleans with the Ball family. You know, actually, I can make the argument that the Clippers have a better put together a better deal than the Lakers could for a trade. They have more future draft picks and et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, the qualifying B is if you make the trade to the Lakers, you know that's the fourth pick. That's not a bad consolation to have. So maybe you sit there and you take that pick, throw in Kuzma and you know, a few of the others. That's a possibility. I just don't know if the Knicks are now – I mean, the Knicks were – basing everything on getting the number one draft pick, and they were going to ship it and a couple of their young stars or young players, I don't want to say stars, to the Pelicans. So, you know, this probably put the Lakers back as the leader in the clubhouse, but, you know, we just don't know what David Griffin's going to want in return. And who knows, it may be a wild card that we're not expecting. You know,
it could be a Toronto Raptors, San Antonio Spurs situation from last year that came out of left field, so
nowhere.
To speak,
came
out of nowhere. John, what about the Knicks? Because they're right there at three. You can still get mm-hmm. – because there's a big drop-off. Most people feel there's the top three, and then there's a drop-off of talented prospects in this draft. If you're David Griffin, do you say, Knicks, I want your number three pick. I want Knox in return. Give me another guy you can throw in, and I want your first-round pick the next year.
Oh, I would definitely take that because it would be R.J. Barrett would be the third pick. If,
correct.
I mean, all indications are the Grizzlies are going to trade Ja Morant, who actually may be the best long-term prospect in this draft class. You know, so the Grizzlies are probably sitting there pretty. They don't have the pressure to take Zion, just a PR disaster that would be. But, yeah, I would probably make that trade with the Knicks. However, we're talking about the New York Knicks. Nothing makes sense with them. But if you could get the third pick, R.J. Barrett, throw in Kevin Knox, and a future number one draft pick and maybe yet another player on their team, young player, I think that's a no-brainer for the Pelicans.
And then the Knicks can go after, because they apparently want to go after Kyrie. So if they already trade for Anthony Davis, they can try to get Kyrie.
Now, the wild card in all this is supposedly, and I've heard Bill Simmons and others talk about it, supposedly it's a done deal, and the Knicks feel the same way, that Kevin Durant is going to the Knicks after the season.
But so, but didn't we hear that, too, about LeBron James? Multiple times.
That's a little bit different. KD's a little bit different animal than LeBron James. But do you – you know, can KD and Anthony Davis – their games are a little bit too similar. Can they play together? That's the question that may throw a monkey wrench into everything. But you know, but the biggest thing is you're relying on the Knicks to actually do things that make sense. And when has that ever happened?
Not with James Dolan, they don't.
No, not
with James Dolan at all. We're talking with John Marques. He's a senior sports columnist for the Town Talk on the TownTalk.com here on the Arco Equipment Hotline. John, I want to switch gears from the hardwood to the diamond. A lot of angry LSU baseball fans have been very expressive of their disdain of how the season has occurred. Now, LSU did manage to kind of stop the bleeding in the five-game losing streak, avoided the sweep by Arkansas, and then took the midweek game against UNO. Your thoughts on what you've seen from the LSU baseball team this season, and what do you feel about Paul Menary and his job status?
You know, he should – I mean, the fact that you're even talking about job status with Paul Menary right now is – I just find it ludicrous. I mean, you look at what he's done, the number of World Series he's been to, the national championship he's won. I mean, they've had a rash of injuries this year that have just – you know, decimated them. I mean, it's not as drastic as what South Carolina has experienced with their pitching staff, but it's, I mean, give the man a break. I mean, he's still going to have him in NCAA regional. I think it was Baseball America actually had them, or it was Collegiate Baseball had them actually hosting a regional. I don't understand. I know LSU fans want to win the SEC championship every year. They want to not never lose a midweek game and go straight to the championship series in Omaha. That's just not realistic anymore. You know, they're gonna have down seasons, and if this is your down season where you're still gonna win, you know, in the mid-30s in the regular season, if not 40 games, host an NCAA regional, I just don't know what your expectations are or who you're gonna get that's gonna do anything better.
John, do you feel, and wrap it up with this, do you feel that maybe this team, watching them from afar, you think maybe they have possibly turned a corner, because they always do very well in the SEC tournament in Hoover? They turn it on for whatever reason. Menary is able to get those guys, and they play at a different level. Do you expect LSU to kind of finish the season strong here against Auburn this weekend and then maybe win a couple of games in the SEC tournament?
I think 2 out of 3 against Auburn is not out of the question to win even a sweep. I mean, the key is going to be, can they get some of their pitchers back? So they can, you know, set up the rotation like he would prefer for tournament ball. But I mean, baseball is a weird game. You know, once you get hot and you get the confidence, it's amazing how that just carries and keeps carrying. That's why you see weird win streaks of 10 and multiple games in a row. I mean, he's got the proven record where they've done it before. Let's just sit back and let's see what happens in the postseason. I mean, that's the bottom line. It's not football where one loss in the regular season ruins your entire season. It's baseball. You know, Skip Bartman used to make fun of people who would panic after one loss. He goes, well, I guess we have to wait, to get, you know, what, 3 weeks before we play again? You know, they play again the next day. They play again the next day. Let's just see what happens.
John, appreciate your insight as always, my friend. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. See you, Ray. Have a good weekend.
John Marques, sports columnist for the Town Talk and thetowntalk.com, joining us, breaking down some Pels, lottery, and LSU baseball. When we come back, we'll wrap up the first hour of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing.
What'd you do?
I broke the desk.
Apparently.
I broke the desk.
What happened?
I have no idea what happened. Well, I have no idea what happened.
There's multiple mics you can use. You should still be able to use your headphones, even though they're plugged into that one.
What to do with my hands? I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, Raymond was... You noticed the music played a hair longer than normal. Coming back in from this segment, that was because Raymond was talking into his microphone, was not working. We don't know why, but he has now moved to a second microphone that we believe is working. I got double thumbs up. That's a good thing.
That's right. I'm back.
Oh, look, there he is.
Hello. Hello, Acadiana.
A smooth start to this segment. Smooth.
Live radio.
Pretty much.
So, the NBA Combine starts today, and we have a pair of LSU players that are taking part in it. Two Tigers are among the 66 players taking part in this week's NBA Combine, where they will do interviews, meet with coaches, meet with team officials, medical doctors, the whole nine yards. It's just like the NFL Combine, just for NBA, and it's only 66 players instead of whatever the number is, like 400. For the NFL Combine. Tremont Waters and Naz Reid, of course, are representing LSU. The event over the two-day period will feature five-on-five games as well as shooting, strength, and agility drills at the Quest Multi-Sport facility in Chicago. Waters, who, of course, is from New Haven, Connecticut, has played 2 years at LSU and this past season was named All-SEC First Team, All-SEC Defensive Team, and was the SEC Co-Defensive Player of the Year. He was also the finalist for the Bob Cousy Award for the best point guard in the nation, as he averaged 15.3 points per game, and he rolled up 192 assists. Naz Reid, who's just a kind of smallish 6'10", is from Asbury Park, New Jersey. He was only at LSU for this one season. He was named to the All-SEC Freshman Team. He averaged almost 14 points and 7 rebounds a contest. Of course, LSU won the SEC regular season title and reached the Sweet 16, despite having their head coach suspended for a month. This is a time for both of these guys to shine. Reed is the prospect that has the better opportunity because of his potential. He's still very raw. If you watch Naz Reid play this past season, as I did, there were times where he dominated a game. And then there were times where he didn't realize that he was 6'10". Like, he was still growing into his body, still trying to figure out how to play in that body of his. So he has potential. I could see him being sneaky and getting into the first round because of his potential. Tremont Waters, he's a little undersized. He has turnover issues. He's probably going to be a second-round pick at best. But both guys can impress with their work ethic, their potential, and their interview. Sometimes it only takes one team to fall in love with you based on an interview, and they will spend a draft pick on you. And that's what Tremont Waters and Naz Reid are hoping to do the next 2 days in Chicago for the NBA Combine. That's going to do it for the first hour here of RP3 and Company. Second hour coming up. We'll be talking to Summer Ellison, UL, starting pitcher, right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidified everybody seeing that LSU for real.
Ragin' Cajun hoop star Elfrid Payton.
But it's definitely a boost when, you know, when you look up in the stadium and you see your mom, see your dad, night in and night out, it's really different. I encourage everybody to be in the opportunity to play at home to do it. It's very fulfilling.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome back to the second hour of RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game.
Your mic works again.
I'm the magic man.
Everything you touch turns to gold.
No. Turns to used copper that no one wants. Welcome to the second hour.
Copper's kind of expensive at the scrapyard.
It is. It is. We can go into a different direction on this show, what happens with abandoned houses and copper. But that's not that show. This is RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. You can also check us out on 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. You can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline if you like, 337-706-0111, if you'd like to tell us how much of crybaby national media and talking heads are being about Zion Williamson possibly coming to the New Orleans Pelicans. I'm ready to get my Zion Williamson jersey, though. I'm going to let you know. I'm also...
Jersey for me.
I'll go with the jersey. Oh, nice. Good. I don't... Anything that's like tight like that is not a good look for you, boy. I need something that's going to, you know,
I only own two jerseys. One, the Drew Brees Saints Super Bowl jersey, the white jersey. It's got the Super Bowl patch on it. Yeah, looks great. And I also own the Chicago Cubs pinstripe Anthony Rizzo jersey. I think I've worn that once in here.
Nice. Yeah. I do like that. That's a clean
pinstripes look. Are incredible.
It's incredible. I own four Redskins jerseys. It's a little much.
It is.
I have Chris Cooley jersey, the former tight end for the Washington Redskins. I have a Fred Smoot jersey. Yes, Fred Smoot. He was, if you remember, he was one of the guys that was on the party boat in Minnesota when things got out of control. And his nickname became Fred Smut. So I have a Chris Cooley jersey, Fred Smoot jersey. I have a John Riggins, Riggo. Whoa, he's like my favorite jersey. And then I also have, rest in peace, number 21, Sean Taylor jersey.
Oh, there you go.
Yes. And I really have a reason never to wear them unless it's a fantasy football draft party.
Basically.
And I'm like, yeah, I'm excited about, but no, I hate my team because I hate my owner. Just not about jerseys, though, ladies and gentlemen. I will get me one of those as soon as Anthony Davis is traded. Your boy will be all about getting me one of those Mardi Gras Anthony Davis jerseys, though, because they will go on sale.
Yeah.
And I will scoop those bad boys up because I'm all about clearance.
Right.
How do you think I got the Fred Smoot jersey? I got it after he was traded or left in free agency. I forget because I don't like spending money. It's not all about jerseys. PGA Championship, which we previewed earlier this week on our new golf show, Chip Shots with Rob Spires, Tuesdays from 9 to 10. Make sure to check out next week's episode. We talked about the PGA Championship, who we liked. It's already teed off this morning, the year's second major. And we have the first group that's already through five holes. And we have about, it looks like, more than 30 golfers are already on the course. So we have some early scores to report to you. It appears to be a six-way tie at the top of the leaderboard at one under. JJ Spawn is through five at one under. Sam Burns, LSU Tiger, Louisiana. That's right, Louisiana native. Sam Burns is tied for the early lead. He's through four holes as well. And some other big names of note. Henrik Stenson, he's tied for seventh at even par. Jimmy Walker, Kelly Kraft, they're at even par. Sergio, I am bound to have a meltdown sometime today. Garcia, he's at even par through one as well. So we'll keep you posted with some of these early morning scores. Adam Scott, he's plus one already through the day. So
you can't win it today, but you can lose it.
Oh, you can so lose it today. You can so lose it today. So that's where we stand right now. With the PGA Championship currently, first round has teed off. We're through about five holes with the first group. That's at Bethpage State Park, the Bethpage Black course, one of the most difficult courses in the country. They're hosting the PGA Championship, the year's second major, because the PGA was moved up from the fourth spot to the number two spot in the lineup for the majors. So we'll keep you posted on that throughout the show. But right now it's time to talk a little Raging Cajun softball. We know that the Raging Cajuns are a 50-win team, that they went undefeated in Sun Belt Conference play. They went undefeated in the Sun Belt Conference Tournament, regular season and conference champions. They were ranked in the top 10 in the nation in the polls. But because of RPI, they were forced to go on the road. And they are playing in the Oxford Regional starting tomorrow. Ole Miss is the host team there out of the SEC. They are the 11th national seed. So the Raging Cajuns have a favorable matchup. I was able to catch up with the Sun Belt Conference Pitcher of the Year the other day at Lampson Park before the team departed to go on the road to get ready for tomorrow's regional. Here's my conversation with Raging Cajun star pitcher and former Terlings Catholic star, Summer Ellison. And this is what she had to say about what her and this team's focus is this week heading into the regional.
We're just focusing on what we need to focus on right now, and that's playing how we know how to play and just playing for the love of the game and not getting too much into our heads about it and just we've been good all year. We know what to do. We know how to play, and we just gotta do those things, do the small things, do the little things right, and compete how we know how to compete.
How difficult is it, you know, after you have such a long season and you play these teams that you're familiar with in the Sun Belt Conference and then other teams that you've played year in and year out, like Baylor, you guys, you typically play them on a pretty regular basis. But now you're going into a situation where you haven't faced these teams. You're not that all familiar with them. What's that process like? Does that change how you guys prepare, or are you guys just focused on what you do?
Well, the coaching staff does a really good job of watching film and knowing who we play and all that kind of stuff. And then they form a game plan, and all I have to do is trust Coach Rob. He is the one that works with me, and he knows what the opposing team's hitters are like. And he tells me all I have to do is trust him. Like, he's going to call pitches, and he's going to know what their hitters do and their tendencies and everything like that. So all I have to do is trust him. I don't have to get too much in my head about it. I just have to focus on my mechanics, my skill set, and everything like that.
Last year, you emerged as one of the best pitchers in the conference. This year, you kind of carried that over, named the pitcher of the year, all types of accolades, all types of records. What was different for you from last year to this year, maybe in your preparation or just how you mentally prepare yourself game in and game out?
Preparing myself mentally game in and game out is pretty much the same. I try to stay pretty much stress-free. Mm-hmm. I don't let things get to me, and I just go out and play like a big kid. I try not to stay uptight because I lead the team. My energy leads the team, so
right.
They feed off of what I do. So if I get out there stressed out, then they're going to stress out. So I try to stay as calm as possible and just trust my coach, trust my defense, and everything behind me.
You worked a lot of innings this year. You were out there in the circle a lot this year. It didn't seem to bother you at all. Was that something that you were anticipating, that you were going to get more work this year, more innings? And did you do anything differently in the off season to better condition yourself to be able to handle such a large workload?
Well, this year was the first year that we actually had a fall to work with Coach Glasgow, and we also had Coach Mike come in this year. So that was a pretty key element, having an actual full fall to work with him and get to know him and know his tendencies and realize that, hey, I might be throwing a lot this year. And we worked towards that, building up pitch counts and stuff like that, just getting my body ready to play in these long games and this heat and everything.
For you, you know, the team has hit so much better this year than in last year. Really, the bats kind of came alive. Did that, knowing that your lineup can go out there and score 6 runs on any given day, does that make you more relaxed when you go out there, when you go out there to pitch?
It does, because it gives me a little bit more cushion. So if I do end up messing up, you know, I know they're going to have my back and come back and score. Like, in conference tournament, we've come from behind 2 out of 3 games, I think. And I knew right away, as soon as they scored those runs, I knew we were coming back right away, and I knew my team wasn't just going to lay down and let it happen. So,
We're talking with Summer Ellison. She's the junior pitcher for the UL Raging Cajun softball team. They're going to be heading to Oxford this weekend to take part in the Oxford Regional. Summer, was there any disappointment for you and your team that you weren't hosting a regional despite winning 50 games and being ranked in the top 10 overall in the polls?
I don't think there was any disappointment at all. I think the team's very excited, and that we see this as a great opportunity, that this may be one of our best shots. We're a mid-major school, and we don't get that much opportunity, and everybody kind of talks down on us, and this is our shot to prove that we are who we say we are and that we are good.
Talk a little bit about your individual accolades this year. I mean, you reset the record books. You hit all these milestones. Was any of them more special or unique to you than the others, or is it more just about what you guys have been able to do as a team?
I mean, they're all pretty special to me. You know, being one of the – showing up in the record books is always special. But I couldn't have done it without the help of my team. Like, the preparation that we've all put in in the fall and all year long, like, I couldn't have done it without them. So it's pretty special to everybody, not just me.
What do you know about the teams that you're matching up with or anything like that? I mean, or better yet, I'll re-ask the question. Is your mentality that you're going to have to do whatever you can to, you know, throw a shutout, keep avoid having any runners on base whatsoever. What's your mindset heading into this regional to be able to help your team win this regional and move on?
I'm not trying to do anything extra. I'm going out there, I'm trusting my coaches, trusting my defense, and I'm going to trust that my hitters are going to hit and have my back and just do what I know how to do every day, and that's just throw quality pitches and make quality outs.
When you were pitching years ago at Turling's Catholic, and you guys were one of the best teams in Acadiana and one of the best teams in the state, I know talking to you in the past, are you surprised where you're at now in your career with the Raging Cajuns, or is this always where you thought you would be as the ace of the staff, Sun Belt Conference Pitcher of the Year, or are you even still surprised of just how dominant you've been at this level?
I'm not surprised because I've worked really, really hard for this, and it's something that I've always wanted. However, I didn't dream that I would be where I'm at right now in the past. If it wasn't for other things that had happened, and the amount of work that I've put into it, then I wouldn't be where I'm at.
How much of a difference is this team has this year heading into the regional compared to last year? I mean, last year so much had gone on, and you guys, in a lot of ways, were still getting kind of comfortable with Coach Glasgow and in his approach to things. Do you guys feel like you're better prepared this time around for the NCAA regional than you were, say, last year?
I feel like we're a lot more relaxed. We've had so much going on in the past 2 years, from changing over to coaches and then the loss of G and everything else that has happened. This team knows struggle, and we know suffering, and we know what it's like to fight. And I think that's just what's going to push us a little bit more this year. Like, we have that little extra fire of we've been through so much and we can't stop now.
You say you can't stop now. Expectations are so high for this program. You knew that before you got here. That's one of the reasons why you committed to come and be a Raging Cajun, because of the high level expectations, College World Series, berths, NCAA Super Regionals, regionals, and everything like that. What would it mean to you for you guys to be able to take care of business this weekend and win the Oxford Regional and move on to the next level?
That would be, a dream come true to be able. The hardest part of getting to the World Series is getting to the World Series. And it's not going to be easy no matter where they send us. If we win this and they send us across the country, we're going to go and play how we've been playing and keep the same mentality, the same mindset and everything. It hasn't happened since my freshman year. We haven't been to a Super since my freshman year, and it's just something completely different. It's a whole different ballgame.
What would you like to say to the Raging Cajun fans? They fill up Lansing Park, like always. It's one of the best atmospheres in all of college softball. Do you have a message to the fans, hopefully, that'll be making the trip, the six-hour trip up to Oxford? How much of that Cajun vermilion and white do you hope to see in the stands starting this weekend?
We have the best fans, without a doubt, the best fans in the country. And I know we're going to have a good bit turn up there. And I know it's going to be loud, it's going to be crazy. And I'm just super excited to see the emotion that the fans bring there, because it means the world, being a local kid and them supporting me and supporting the Raging Cajuns. It's out of this world what they do for us, and I can't wait to see them there.
That was UL star junior pitcher Summer Ellison, the Sun Belt Conference Pitcher of the Year. I was able to catch up with her the other day at Lampson Park before the team departed for the Oxford Regional. They'll begin play tomorrow there in the afternoon. So good luck to the Raging Cajuns there in the Oxford Regional. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, Houston Astros, they get the sweep over the Detroit Tigers, and Justin Verlander was magnificent. We'll talk more about that right here on 103.7 The Game.
This ball's hit pretty well out in the right center field. Jones racing over, won't get there. That's going to go all the way to the wall. Chirino scores. Mariznick flying around second and headed for third with an RBI triple. And the Astros lead is 5-1.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 as well as on 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. Houston Astros held on for that 5-1 win over the Detroit Tigers there in Motown to sweep the three-game set from Justin Verlander's former team. And guess what? Justin Verlander was pretty sensational on the mound against his former team in his second trip back to his old ballpark, Comerica Park, since his trade from Detroit to Houston back in 2017. Verlander only allowed two hits on and one run in seven innings of work. The lone run he gave up came off a Jacoby Jones home run in the bottom of the third. The former LSU star scored the Tigers' only run.
What a great Tiger.
What a great Tiger. Alex Bregman, talking about great Tigers, hit his 14th home run of the season. A solo shot off of Greg Soto to open the scoring in the first. Bregman did pull within two home runs of his teammate, the Springer Dinger himself, George Springer, the American League leader. Springer nearly hit one of his own, but Detroit's left fielder Christian Stewart reached above the wall to make the catch there in the fourth inning. Verlander retired the first eight batters he faced before Jones hit that 436-foot home run in the third. But then the former Cy Young Award winner and World Series champion rebounded by striking out the side in the fourth. He ended up striking out a total of nine. Verlander's record now for the season is 7-1. 7-1, and he sure does look like he's putting together himself a Cy Young season this year for the Houston Astros. He really does look like he was worth that extension. I mean, he is undoubtedly the ace of this staff, and he looks like the best pitcher in the entire American League right now. What a great start for him, 7-1. Oh, and by the way, he married Kate Upton. So, all-time Hall of Famer there for Justin Verlander. I may give him hell and call him Mr. Kate Upton, but just respect. You know, you ever meet Justin Verlander, you just go up to him, you just shake his hand, you go, job well done. Job well done for you, sir. Astros are, they're just one of the hottest teams right now. They've won 11 of 12 overall, and this is without Jose Altuve, who's still on the IL, right? And Jose was not having a great year. He had some power production, but the batting average is woefully down, a sub 250. Even with him out, this lineup is so good. The Astros are so good, so deep, and so talented that they have the heart and soul of their team struggling at the plate, having his worst year at the plate in his career. He's a former league MVP, the heartbeat of your team, and he's out now on the IL, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Right. And the Astros are about to catch the Red Sox, who are a very good team, been playing better in their last 10 games. I'm looking there, 8-2 in their last 10 games, but still underperforming overall, third place in the division. So the Red Sox are going to be there at the end, maybe catching them part of the season.
They could have the World Series hangover, though. And the Red Sox have shown that before. Where,
but if you catch them early in the season like you're doing now and get them out of the way, then you can maybe get a series victory on the road against Boston and get out of town looking even better. I don't expect a sweep here. Do I think there'll be 11 games, one in a row by the Astros at the end of this weekend? Probably not, but if that does happen, then, I mean, goodness, without Altuve, my Lord.
Yes, they're off tonight, the Astros are, before the AL Championship Series rematch at Boston, as Cody indicated. Gerrit Cole, 4-4 on the year, he will be getting the start in that series opener for the Astros on Friday night versus Rick Porcello. You can listen to the Astros series with the Boston Red Sox live on our sister station, KVOL, the Rewind, 97.7 FM, 1330 AM Lafayette.
Except on Sunday. Should be here on Sunday.
It will be on 103.7 The Game Sunday. We got LSU baseball tonight and Friday night and then Saturday during the day. But then we'll have Astros on the airwaves Sunday right here on 103.7 The Game. We'll talk more Houston Astros, sensational start, Justin Verlander, with our next guest, James Yasko of the Lima Time Time podcast. He joins us here on RP3 and Company after this break on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW channel 32.1. Houston Astros have now won 8 straight. They're the best team in baseball record-wise and just the way what they're playing. And they're doing it without the heart and soul of this team, the former league MVP, Jose Altuve, who's on the IL, formerly known as the DL. But they keep just racking up wins left and right. We're going to talk more about the Houston Astros' just torrid pace here in the month of May with our next guest. He is the co-host of the Lima Time Time podcast, the one and only James Yasko. James, how are you this morning?
I can't find my keys, Ray. So I'm all right.
Did you look in the couch cushions?
I just basically tore my couch up with a knife looking for them. They're not there. They're not in the car. They're not. I don't know.
That was my guess, James. I said check the car, but dang.
Are they in your pocket?
No, I went to the grocery store last night around 8 o'clock, and I know they're at the house because the car's in the driveway. So, I don't know.
Check the freezer, brother. Bathroom, laundry room, the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
So
otherwise, I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine. We're on with James Yasko, co-host of the Lima Time Time podcast, who is possibly going to have to take the bus to work.
No, it's okay, James. Remember, summer's almost here. Like, summer is right around the corner.
2 weeks from today. I think I can make it 2 weeks without Keith.
James, let's talk a little bit about the Astros. They have now won 8 straight. They had to put Jose Altuve on the IL this past weekend, and it really hasn't seemed to affect them at all. He'd been struggling at the plate anyway, the former league MVP. Yet, here they are. They're the best team in baseball. It's not even close. What are your thoughts of what you're seeing from the Houston Astros?
I mean, it's every night is a lot of fun, and that's a fun thing to watch when you're a fan. With Altuve going on the IL, I don't think it's a fake injury like Derek Holland talked about yesterday, that he went on the IL with a fake injury. But I think for Altuve, his hamstring is bothering him, but I also think it's a 10-day mental break for Altuve, where they're like, go away, work out, get your rehab in, and come back with the approach that you had sort of at the beginning of the year. So I think it's a good little 10-day break for Altuve to just kind of get his mind right, but also, you're trying to replace a 150 hitter over the previous 20 games, and you get Aledmys Diaz, who's doing a pretty good job filling in. So, no, it's just encouraging to see all around.
We're on with James Yasko of the Lima Time Time podcast here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. James, Verlander is now 7-1 on the year. It's only May.
And his one loss was really stupid.
And the one loss was, as in your words, very stupid. He's 7-1. I know he re-signed the extension, and people are like, well, is that too much money for a guy? Obviously, it's not. He's the ace of the staff. He's pitching right now. He is the best pitcher in the American League. Are you surprised at all at just how dominant he has been at his age for this ball club to start the year?
No, I'm not surprised at all. And I think we talked about this when he signed the extension that Verlander's a guy that he takes an awful lot of pride, not only in his outings, but in his career. And I think that he realizes that, another World Series and another couple of dominant seasons, and he's looking at the Hall of Fame. And I think he's pitching he's pitching with that in mind every time he goes out. So, and I think he's trying to get as many wins in as he can before he becomes a dad and all of his free time goes away. So I think that plays a role as well.
Oh, that's James just unveiling a little bit of himself there. Speaking from experience, it sounds like how all your time is dominated. I don't know what you're talking about, James, at all. Do you feel like – I know, look, it's early and the season is an absolute grind in the big leagues. But 7-1 is just a torrid pace for any pitcher. I mean, we're not even through the month of May, and he looks like he's primed to get to 10 wins by the end of the month. That is just ridiculous, a ridiculous performance. Do the Astros have any type of worry whatsoever putting too much wear and tear on Justin, or is Justin just the guy, like, you know, he's going to go out there regardless, it doesn't really matter?
He's going to give you 250 innings no matter what, you know, postseason included. You know, if he was 23 and doing this, I think you'd see him on a shorter leash. But when you're 35, 36 years old and you've thrown as much as Verlander has, I don't think you really – obviously he knows how to take care of his body. He knows how to take care of his arm. He's just one of those guys that he's a workhorse. I mean, it's sort of Clemens-esque, you know, that he can perform at a high level, you know, this late in his career.
We're talking with James Yasko of the Lehman Time podcast here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. James, we've talked about this a couple of weeks ago. What month are we going to circle on the calendar that the Houston Astros will have clinched the American League West?
It's still going to be September, but it could be the second week in September.
Because there's really no one that's giving any type of fight. It just doesn't seem that way. I mean, everyone was talking about the Mariners to start off with, and then they've already quickly faded away. The Angels aren't all that good. Yeah, surprise, surprise. Who's going to give them? Who's going to give them a challenge? I mean, that's my question, James. Is that, you know, who's going to give them a challenge? And by the way, I have to keep you honest here, James, your co-host of the Lima Time podcast,
uh-huh.
Mr. Patrick McClellan, joined us earlier this week, and he said that he expects the Astros to wrap up the division title by the end of this month. Your response to that from your friend and co-host?
That seems early, but you know, the logic, I'm sure past logic is always sound. So, you know, hard to argue with that. You know, last year Oakland was sort of doing the same thing, and then they got hot and made it more of a race than anyone really expected to. So, you know, just given that Oakland did it last year, Oakland probably has the best shot. They're a young team. They've got some decent pitching. You know, when they're healthy, they can hit. But there were signs that what Oakland did last year wasn't for real. I mean, their record in one-run games, you know, they just got hot, and the Astros held them off. It could happen. I don't know that it will. But I guess if I had to pick of Seattle, Anaheim, Oakland, or Arlington, Oakland probably gets the nod as having the best shot at making the Astros somewhat uncomfortable.
We're on with James Yasko of the Lima Time podcast here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. James, I want to talk George Springer. The Springer Dinger has 16 home runs that leads the American League. The most home runs he's ever hit in an entire season is 34. He's almost halfway there, and it's not even the end of May. We know how good of a leadoff hitter he is with the leadoff homers, but are you surprised just by the immense power that he's displayed this season to start off with after coming off a year where he only hit 22?
No, it's not terribly surprising. But, I mean, the way he's hitting, he's gotten more selective at the plate. And it looks like, you know, the first few years, I think he had somewhat of a plan. But I think this is the impact of Michael Brantley on Springer, that he is absolutely destroying baseballs that he's looking for. You know, I don't know how many of his 16 home runs are a mistake. You know, that he just, you know, just sort of, you know, managed to put the bat on the ball. Like, he's destroying pitches at a level that he has not done so before in his career. So I think he's, you know, he knows he's got a potential contract coming up, and Michael Brantley is proving, he's sort of turned into this edition of Carlos Beltran. You know, that he's a mentor, and but he's, you know, but Brantley can also rake as well. So it's not terribly surprising, but I think you're seeing the culmination of what's the Springer's sixth year in the bigs. I think it's all coming together.
It seems like it is all coming together. Also, seems there to be a friendly competition for who's going to hit the most home runs for this team between Springer and former LSU Tiger star Alex Bregman, who's tearing it up as well. hit himself another one last night. These two guys are playing at such a high level. Could the Astros, whether it's with Bregman or Springer or possibly Verlander, because he's done it before, could the Houston Astros have themselves another MVP this year?
I mean, it's hard. If they don't, it's going to be one of those, you know, two Astros split the vote kind of deals. And I think that what we're seeing is the it's competition. All these dudes genuinely seem to enjoy each other's company, and they push each other. And, you know, in a division where there's not a ton of competition, you have to get it where you can. So I think they're all pushing each other to, you know, they're all trying to one-up each other, which I'm certainly okay with.
James, we'll wrap it up with this. Astros are off tonight, but then they have the three games set. They're at Boston. It's a rematch of last year's American League Championship Series. The Red Sox are the defending World Series champions. They're struggling a little bit. Now, the Astros have put together this winning streak against the likes of Kansas City, Detroit, in an empty ballpark, which is just depressing to see on television, and Texas Rangers. Boston is a team that eliminated them last year. It's going to be a marquee matchup. You'll have Gerrit Cole start game one of this series. Is this an important early season series for the Astros, either mentally or just in the standings? In your opinion, does this series have really hold any real weight?
I mean, it's three games, so I don't know. And they play Boston in Houston. I want to say it's next weekend. Like it's one of those series.
Correct. That Boston comes to town next weekend.
Yeah, but it's one of those series that's real quick, sort of back to back. So I don't know how much. Other than it's three games against, you know, the team that eliminated you, and it's at Fenway, and it seems, I don't have any data to back this up in front of me right now, but it seems like they play pretty well at Fenway. So you know, it'll be a fun series, and yeah, I mean, an 8-game winning streak is fun, but as you said, it's the Rangers, Royals, and Tigers, you know, so it'll be fun to see a team that, you know, maybe they pick up the intensity a little bit. So, but I don't know, as far as like, are we going to be talking about this series in October? Probably not.
James, appreciate your time as always, and make sure, I know you're not the biggest Houston Rockets fan, but make sure to, you know, next time you see your boy Pat, just give him a hug from us.
Yeah,
you know, I feel like he needs it.
Yeah, no, yeah. You know, maybe buy a Rockets fan a massage. You know, just let them get away for 45 minutes or an hour.
James, appreciate you as always, man. Good luck finding your keys, brother.
Yeah, I'm just gonna have to go without them. I don't know where they are. So I appreciate it.
James Yasko, co-host of the Lehman Time podcast. My man was looking for his keys during the entire interview. Didn't miss a beat. Had stats, data, just in the noggin, just spilling it out on the radio. And still has not found his keys. I've been there. That's where you make the phone call. Yeah, I'm not going to be able to make it today. Why? Is it an emergency? Did someone get sick? Are you at the hospital? Did someone die? No. I just can't find my keys. Been there. It's a tough spot. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll give you an update. What's going on at Bethpage Black for the PGA Championship. Right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. Here on 103.7 The Game, we're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also catch us on 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. Update from the PGA Championship. Opening round has begun. The first group is already through about eight holes on the course. Your leader as of right now is former LSU Tiger Sam Burns. He's tied for the lead at 1 under par. Now there's about 1,800 other golfers tied with him, so we'll need to pump the brakes a little bit. Brooks Koepka, he birdied his first hole. He's already at 1 under, just through one. Some other golfers of note. Kelly Kraft is at even par through three. Bubba Watson, you know, he owns a replica General Lee from the Dukes of Hazzard, just letting you know. Two-time Masters champion. He's at even par through two as well. Henrik Stenson, as we mentioned before, he's plus one. Tommy Fleetwood, plus one. Adam Scott, plus one. Patrick Reed, everyone's friend, plus one through three. Justin Rose is plus one as well. Francisco Molinari, our new golf show host, Rob Spires' pick to win, is plus one through one. Sergio Garcia is on his through three holes, and he's already plus two, so he's having a Sergio day already. Ricky Fowler is also tied for 47th right now with Sergio because he's through two holes, and he's plus two, and they're joined by Tiger Woods, who began the day on hole number 10. On the back nine is how he's going to begin his round, and he double bogeyed the par four number 10 there at...
No!
Still early, Cody. Still early. So yeah, early scores there. First round of the PGA Championship is off and running. Other golfers that will be teeing off later today, Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, Lefty, Phil Mickelson, Ian Poulter, others are still scheduled to tee off later this morning. John Daly in his golf cart, which will itself be an absolute train wreck to watch. John Rahm as well. So, and Jason Day. Some big names still to tee off, but Ricky Fowler's on the golf course, Tiger Woods, Brooks Koepka, and, of course, the former LSU Tiger Sam Burns is currently leading the PGA Championship there at Bethpage Black for the second major of the season. Now, we're going to stay on the East Coast, but we're going to go a little down south from the state of New York. We're going to go to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Ladies and gentlemen,
I've been there.
Congratulations. Philadelphia Phillies brought in a celebrity.
Will Smith?
Yeah, it was Jaden Smith. Bruce Willis. That's right. John freaking McClain. John McClain threw out the first pitch at the Phillies game yesterday, ladies and gentlemen.
That must have been awesome.
Right, this is guy, yippee-ki-yay, yeah, this is the man who thwarts terrorists. This is one of the most badass action stars in Hollywood history. And you're thinking, hey, this guy's going to go out there, he's going to take care of business for the first pitch,
Bruce Willis, like, birthed Jason Statham from, like, a bowel movement he had or something. That's who Bruce Willis is. I'm sorry. Both of those guys could eat me alive.
They would just look at you and
right,
you'd
I would pass out.
So... we know that Bruce Willis is an absolute badass. He's there to throw the first pitch for the Phillies.
I believe, I'm looking at the video, I believe Aaron Nola is actually catching him, I believe.
That's right. Former LSU star Nola is catching him. It's a big deal. You got Mr. Blockbuster himself. Mr. Co-founder of Planet Hollywood, which does not exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of going out there like John McClane via Die Hard, our boy Bruce Willis was out there like Hudson Hawk yesterday. And the Philly fans, well, they expressed themselves.
Here's the pitch. And there's the reaction.
What you can't see is, first of all, Willis is not even on the mound.
He's about four steps in front of the mound.
He's about four or five steps in front of the pitcher's mound. So he's not even on the mound. And he winds up and throws it and skips it.
Yep. One big hop. Oops.
Why do they try? They always try to do that. Just throw a high one. Just throw. I'd rather overthrow the catcher and be like, well, that guy has no control, but at least he has an arm. All these guys are trying to get it. It's nothing as bad as the Carl Lewis one, though, from back in the day where it went like 4 feet.
Yeah.
You're like, dude, you're in Olympian gold medals? What are you doing?
Do better.
But Bruce Willis, John McClain, was
good
promptly
effort.
Booed by the
all
Philadelphia.
Six fans.
Promptly booed off the field for his first pitch. So, big up to the Philadelphia Philly fans for being, well, Philly fans. That's going to do it for the second hour here at RP3 and Company. We're going to talk Pels Lottery with Les East of Crescent City Sports when we come back on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parts III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having that opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to the third and final hour of RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW channel 32.1, as well as 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. We led off today's show talking about, well, first of all, Screamin' A. Smith having a meltdown that the New York Knicks did not, in fact, win the NBA draft lottery and instead went to the Pelicans, and that he is filled with dismay, which could be an act or is maybe, it could be an act or could be real, or maybe it's a combination of both. Either way, anytime.
It's 90 seconds of your life well spent. It's a minute and 29 seconds of your life that you need to go and check out.
You just want to walk up to him and go, you're a grown man.
Right, exactly. He looked like he was sitting in his car in the dark, like he had just left from wherever he was watching the draft lottery. Like, he couldn't even get home. You were a grown man.
It's like he's like, I need to talk to my therapist. I can't get a hold of my therapist, so I'm going to cry in my car. It's like, come on, man. You're a grown man. You're a professional.
Take it to the gram.
Oh. And then we also talked about how other national media folks are starting to construct stories that Zion Williamson, in fact, does not have to come to the New Orleans Pelicans, that he will, in fact, go back to Duke instead of playing for New Orleans. And then that's what he should do because, well, that's what certain people do in this media world that we live in. So we're going to talk a little bit about that as well as the historic night for the New Orleans Pelicans with our next guest. He joins us every Thursday. He's one of the best in the business. He covers the New Orleans Saints as well as the Pelicans for CrescentCitySports.com. It's the one and only Les East. Les, how are you doing this morning, brother?
A lot better than Stephen A. Smith, apparently. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. Look, we'll get to the whining by some folks on the national scene that the top overall pick's not going to be going to a franchise located in Los Angeles or New York. Momentarily, Les, because I'm sure you have some salty thoughts about that. But let's start off, as the lottery is going along, they build up the momentum, and you see that the Pels may have an actual chance of getting the pick. But how stunning was it that New Orleans, who had a 6% chance of getting the top overall pick, ended up getting it the other night?
Well, it was very surprising just because of the numbers involved, and yet I just had a feeling that something good was going to happen for them, not necessarily the first pick, but I was not surprised when I saw that they had moved into the top four and that they had exceeded their slot based on one lost record. I just had a feeling that something good was going to happen to them. I had no idea why. And then once you get in there, anything can happen. And when the Lakers went up first in the top four with the fourth pick, then you started to get a feeling that, wow, something really crazy might be going on here because that's one of the two marquee franchises already out of the way, the Lakers and the Knicks, and the other two being the Pelicans and Grizzlies. So as it went along, you just started wondering if something weird was going to happen, having flashbacks to 2012 when the thing happened with Anthony Davis. But that was that wasn't as unlikely as this one. It was just a remarkable thing that just kept building over the course of 20 minutes or so.
We're on with Les East of CrescentCitySports.com. He covers the New Orleans Saints and the New Orleans Pelicans. Les, I found it quite kind of, I don't know, ironic in a lot of ways that the two least valuable NBA franchises, the Memphis Grizzlies and the Orleans Pelicans, got the number one and the number two overall pick over the two most valuable NBA franchises, according to Forbes magazine, in the Knicks and the Lakers. And they had to settle for 3 and 4. Not only was it New Orleans, but it was also Memphis. Can we go ahead and get rid of this whole notion that the lottery is rigged? I mean, I think the other night proves that, correct?
The other night should be the final bit of proof necessary to destroy it. I think the Pelicans winning it in 2012 was one of several examples of how the thing is not rigged. You know, some people still can't get over the fact that Patrick Ewing went to the Knicks, you know, whatever that was, 30-something years ago, which I think was the first lottery. But you look at it, how many times over the years have the Lakers, the Celtics, the Knicks, the Sixers had picks in there and not come away with the number one pick, and then franchises such as New Orleans and gets the number one pick, Memphis gets number two. You've had other, you know, Cleveland's won it twice. I wouldn't consider them necessarily a marquee franchise, even though they're a big market. So, yeah, I mean, anybody who believes that the NBA lottery is fixed in favor of the big market teams or fixed in any manner probably still doesn't think anybody went to the moon.
So we're saying that what happened the other night has not convinced Kyrie Irving of changing his mind on how things work with the world and the universe, is what you're telling me, Les.
I'm guessing that, but we'll wait and see. Maybe he'll tweet something out that'll clarify that for us.
Speaking with Les East of CrescentCitySports.com. Les, they have the pick now. That gives them so much more flexibility on what to do with Anthony Davis. Now David Griffin is going to negotiate a trade from a position of power more so than everyone else that he's going to be negotiating with, whether that's the Lakers, the Knicks, or the Celtics. How much of an advantage is that going to be for David Griffin now that he can pretty much ask whatever price he wants? And if someone really wants Anthony Davis, they're going to have to give him a king's ransom.
Yeah, I think it's very helpful. I wrote about this to some degree at CrescentCitySports.com. They, you know, the Pelicans have been in sort of a reactive position since late January, since Davis says, I want out of here. And then the Pelicans have kind of had to do everything within the context of somebody else putting them in a position they don't want to be in. And now they're operating from a position of strength in that they're going to be a good team no matter what with this number one pick and with some of the assets they already have. And whether Anthony Davis stays or they trade him, the trade still seeming to be the more likely of the two scenarios, then they have a position of strength. They don't have to take a bad trade. There are plenty of enough suitors out there that they should be, drive the price up as they bargain against one another. So David Griffin can be patient in that regard. Conceivably, he could even say, if he doesn't like the offers, he could even say, look, we have him for another year. We'll go into the season, and when he plays with Zion Williamson, he's going to see how good a team we are. And he may change his mind later on down the road. I don't think that's the way they want to go, but I think that's a more reasonable leverage possibility than they had before the lottery. And the other thing that the lottery did is it clarifies who has what to offer. And with the Knicks and Lakers both presumably being along with the Celtics being the franchises most likely to put together a package for Davis, having the 3 pick in New York and the 4 pick in L.A. Clarifies things and strengthens the offer that those two teams can make to David Griffin. So he's just got to sit back and let those offers roll in. He's in a much better position than he was in a few days ago.
Talking with Les East of CrescentCitySports.com. He covers the New Orleans Pelicans and the New Orleans Saints. He's in a terrific position right now. Let's talk about that and some possible trade scenarios now that we know what the order is and who has what. The Lakers have the fourth pick. They have some young assets. I know Pelicans fans and a lot of people don't think they have a good enough package for Anthony Davis, especially how things went down. But Griff does have a good working relationship with the Brain Trust over there in Los Angeles, including LeBron James and his agent. So they do have a respectful relationship. You have that situation. You have Boston, and you also have New York. Let's kind of break down all three quickly here, Les. Let's start with L.A. They have some young assets. I'm really high on Ingram. I think he has potential, and we've seen what happens to former Lakers once they leave Los Angeles. They all of a sudden become all-stars and really valuable players. So it could be more of the toxic environment that is the Lakers. What do you think the Lakers can put on the table with those assets and the fourth overall pick? Do you think they need to throw in another first-rounder next year? What do you think kind of package L.A. would have to do to get Anthony Davis?
Well, I think that has a lot to do with what other teams are willing to put up there, because this is going to get into a bidding war. And so, you know, I think the Lakers, like anybody else, will try and withhold certain assets initially that they might be willing to put on the table later on. I agree with you about Ingram. At the very least, he is the most proven of the young players, I think, to this point. I'm not sure about Ball, whether he's ever going to be a great player. I think he'll be a pretty good point guard. That's, you know, a point guard is a position that the Pelicans could upgrade. They could also re-sign Elfrid Payton. But, you know, that's a guy who would probably be in the mix. The number one next year, yeah, that's something they could throw in to sweeten the pot. You know, if they get Anthony Davis, there's a good chance the Lakers sneak into the playoffs next year. So I don't know that number one pick is going to be a lottery pick. I'm assuming it's the Lakers' own pick. I think this is going to be a feeling out process among those three teams and perhaps the Clippers and others. Nobody's going to want to put the best offer they have on the table initially, and then they're going to see what the competition is from the other places. But we've already seen from the Lakers, now Magic Johnson's out of the equation, but they just seem to want to offer quantity over quality when they made those offers to the Pelicans back in February, and I'm not sure they're going to be able to put together the best package.
We're on with Les East of CrescentCitySports.com. Les, Boston could put together an interesting package. They don't have the high picks as, say, the Knicks or the Lakers do, but they do have a shakeup with their team. Terry Rozier proved that he could be a point guard for a playoff team last year. Maybe you get him. Maybe you get Jason Tatum. A couple of picks. That would be you get two starters and then a couple of picks. That would have to be pretty appealing to Griff and the front office, especially with the working relationship he has with Danny Ainge from their days in Phoenix.
Yeah, I think the Celtics are a very strong possibility in this regard. Certainly Tatum is the type of really good player who could be the centerpiece of a package. You mentioned Rozier as well. I do think we talked about this a week or so ago on the show, I believe, that the Celtics' failure in the playoffs could motivate them to restructure their team significantly, which would motivate them maybe to offer a little more for Davis. And certainly not only losing to Milwaukee, but losing in a fairly uncompetitive series could be just that. So I think that's definitely a team to keep an eye on. I think the lack of high picks isn't necessarily a problem. I think with the Pelicans winning the lottery, they can kind of look at this as a situation where they can be a playoff team next year and become a serious contender in the short term. And young veterans, I think at this point, might be more attractive to them, since their rebuilding effort's going to be centered around an 18-year-old. I'm not sure future draft picks are as attractive as they would have been if they hadn't won the lottery.
Let's wrap it up with this, brother. A lot of people are talking about, well, Zion Williamson doesn't have to go to New Orleans. He shouldn't go to New Orleans. They are a dumpster fire and everything else like this. Forgetting that they have new leadership. They have a dedicated owner who's wanting to build a winner. They got one of the best young GMs or front office personnel people in David Griffin running the show. Why do you think the reaction has been what it is from a lot of national people about the Pels getting the pick and that fact that Zion Williamson, even though stars can be in Oklahoma City and Utah these days, you don't have to be on the West Coast or the East Coast anymore. Why do you think that narrative's already been quickly developed by a lot of the national media outlets?
Well, because a lot of the national media outlets are focused on that they're very myopic when it comes to the Northeast and the Eastern Coast. And then you throw in the Lakers because of what the franchise has been over the years. And they don't really have much respect for anything that happens outside of those little bubbles. On top of that, all they're interested in, they're not interested in reporting news or reporting insightful analysis or opinion. They're trying to stir the pot so that they'll get clicks on the website and eyeballs on TV. And the easiest way to do that is to be a contrarian. And this is a great positive story. The story should be how a franchise that's being abandoned by one number one pick is going to get an opportunity to pick the best number one prospect since that player, and maybe even a better prospect than that player in Anthony Davis. And that should be the story. But instead, if you take the contrarian opinion and say that and bring up some ridiculous scenario whereby he goes back to Duke, I don't know, maybe he can go play in the CFL for a year and be a teammate with Johnny Manziel. Let's come up with the most ridiculous thing we can, because people will talk about it. Maybe they'll click on our stupid website and watch our ridiculous TV shows. And so what they're trying to do is get people to talk about it and just generate a buzz, and it has nothing to do with reporting useful or accurate information.
Les, I knew you would bring some saltiness to that discussion, and I appreciate the honesty as always, my friend. Thank you for making time for us this week, brother.
Thanks, Raymond. Look forward to it next week.
It's Les East, CrescentCitySports.com. He covers the Pels and the Saints for that website. Terrific stuff, as always, from Les. We got to hit a break. RP3 and Company returns after this, right here on 103.7 The Game. In Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. Sometimes multiple lines are in one area. So if you or a contractor that you have hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or for another reason, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. What happens then? Maybe you only knock the power out for your entire neighborhood, but sometimes there's an explosion with injuries and even death. It happens every year, and there's a very simple way to avoid it. Before you dig, call 811. Call 811 2 days before you dig. Tell the operator your address, and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. Simple, right? It's free of charge, and it's the law. Louisiana One Call operates 811 as a public service and to promote public safety. Louisiana One Call and 103.7 The Game remind you, call 811 and know what's below before you dig. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 and 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. There's some postseason baseball that we need to get to, ladies and gentlemen. LSU Eunice, we had longtime head coach Jeff Willis on the program a few weeks back. They are starting Region 23 tournament play. The defending national champions on that level. They had a bit of a scare yesterday in tournament play, but they took care of business and they pulled out the win, even though and may have been a little bit more difficult than anticipated. It was an 8-6 win in their opening game. Austin Kirkpatrick had a fifth-inning grand slam that helped number one LSU erase an early deficit on way to the 8-6 Region 23 tourney opening win over number 9 seed Northwest. Kirkpatrick has had a hand in 6 of the team's 8 runs to advance in the winner's bracket play. So congratulations to LSUE for moving on. Also moving on and surviving a bit of a scare is the Southern baseball team. They opened up play in the SWAC baseball tournament. They are the top seed. They got a bit of a scare from Arkansas Pine Bluff in the first round last night, but managed to make big plays and needed to pull out the victory as well as they move on, keeping their hopes of getting to an NCAA regional alive and well. So congratulations to LSUE for keeping things going in their postseason, and also congratulations to Southern University Jaguars for doing the same. Also, Cody Schutz. We have a moment here briefly.
Literally, briefly.
I need an update on the Twitter poll question from yesterday where we asked what was responsible for...
I think I can do that in under a minute.
The Let's New Orleans see. Pelicans getting the number one overall pick.
So close.
Give it to me.
It was very close. 12% say Pierre the Pelican bribery, so no worries there. But coming in with the win at 49%, King Cake Baby kidnapped somebody.
Outstanding.
39%. 39% say the NBA draft's not rigged, so.
And what I say to that is that I have actual tweets from the New Orleans Pelicans Twitter account yesterday of showing Pierre the Pelican just going around New Orleans giving
harassing
out
people.
Lottery tickets.
Oh, look out. Come on, Pierre.
Oh, I told you. I told you. I told you what was going on there.
There's a scheme somewhere.
Yeah, Pierre Pelican giving out lotto tickets.
Hmm.
Smart marketing. Big up to Pierre the Pelican.
Shout out to Louisiana Lotto.
When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll talk to Nick Suss, Clarion Ledger. Ole Miss softball talk right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW channel 32.1 as well as 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. We've covered a range of topics today. New Orleans Pelicans getting the top pick in the NBA draft. The national media's reaction to it being, let's just say, entertaining and a bit childish. We've also discussed Houston Astros baseball's winning ways. We had an interview with UL starting pitcher and the Sun Belt Conference Pitcher of the Year, Summer Ellison, on the show as well. And we're going to circle back to the Raging Cajun softball team because they will be taking part this weekend in the Oxford Regional. Ole Miss is the number 11 national seed, and they're the host team for the regional this weekend there. And the Raging Cajuns are the number 2 seed. To get more perspective on the Ole Miss softball program and just how good the Rebels are, we're going to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome back to the show from the Clarion Ledger and a former guest host right here on 103.7 The Game. It's the one and only Nick Suss. Nick, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing okay. Thanks for having me back, man.
Thank you for taking some time out to talk to us, my friend. Let's get to it. Ole Miss is the number 11 seed. What has been the reaction from the Ole Miss faithful on their team hosting a regional, an NCAA regional? Also, and what has been the reaction that a 50-win Raging Cajun team is coming to town as the 2 seed for said regional?
So for the reaction to hosting, it's mostly joy, a little bit of surprise. This is an Ole Miss team that struggled a little bit down the stretch. I think they lost 5 out of 6 to end the season, so I don't know if they were necessarily anticipating being an 11 seed if they were going to host. I thought they were going to be closer to the 14, 15, 16 line. But when you were an 11 seed, there is a little bit of confusion on why your 2 seed is a 50-win team. I think a lot of pundits expected UL to be a host team. And if they weren't a host team, you would think that they would have been the higher-ranked two seed in a 16 or a 15 against a 16 or a 15 national seed. But talking to Coach Mike Smith at Ole Miss yesterday, he kind of thinks it was more about regional location. It was about how close these two teams are. It was about pairing these teams together based off of location more so than how the seeding should work out. So this is a good Ole Miss team. This is a talented team that up until the last week of the season didn't lose an SEC series. They lost their first SEC series in the last week of the season. They've beaten a lot of good teams this year. They've played a lot of good teams very hard. So they're not scared against a 50-win team. They're not nervous to play against a team like UL because they've played against the top competition in the country week in and week out. But when you're the 11 seed, you don't necessarily expect a 50-win team to be knocking on your door.
We're on with Nick Suss of the Clarion Ledger. He covers Ole Miss Athletics here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Nick, tell us a little bit about this team. You said they hadn't dropped a series until the last weekend. Give us some of the stars. Who are some of the impact players for this Rebels team that the Raging Cajuns are going to be facing?
So it all starts in the outfield for this team. Center fielder Kylan Becker is one of the best players in the country. I mean, realistically, she's the first and potentially will go down as one of the very few players in Ole Miss history to participate in four postseasons. Before she had gotten here, the school had never participated in the postseason before, and she has really led the program for the last 4 years. She's going to be the most potent bat in the lineup. She's a very electric defensive outfielder. It's a two-pitcher team, more or less. They've got a power pitcher in Brittany Finney. They've got more of a finesse pitcher in Molly Jacobson. The two of them are probably going to lead the rotation, and they often sub out for each other just to get a mix between power and finesse. The other outfielders on the team are pretty talented as well. There's a freshman named Tate Whitley who has played pretty well this season, and their catcher is a pretty electric defensive catcher, which might match up well with a team like UL that likes to run quite a bit. That's going to be a fun matchup to watch if these two teams do end up facing each other on Saturday in that game too.
We're on with Nick Suss of the Clarion Ledger. He covers Ole Miss Athletics. Nick, tell me a little bit about, you know, this team, this head coach. Is this something that they've been building towards? I know they went toe-to-toe with some of the best this year in the SEC. The SEC, right, put 13 of its 14 teams in to the postseason in regional play this year once again. So the SEC is the best conference for softball in the country. But where does Ole Miss stand? And is this a program that's kind of on the rise for maybe folks that aren't paying attention to the softball program there in Oxford?
Well, before we get into this fun fact, it's actually 13 out of 13. Vanderbilt does not have a softball program. So Nice. Every SEC school that does host a softball program did make the tournament this year. But this is an Ole Miss team that, as I mentioned, before 4 years ago had never made the postseason before.
Never.
Now they've hosted two of the last 3 years. This really is a program on the rise. But it's also a program that kind of likes to play the underdog role. They were predicted to finish 12th out of 13 in the SEC this year, and then they ended up finishing half a game out of second, I think. They finished fifth in the league, but they were right on top of those top seeds. Very, I don't want to say surprising, because they surprised everybody in 2017. They kind of regressed a little bit last year, and now they are where the program kind of sees itself. But I think this is just indicative of how big softball has gotten in the SEC, that all 13 of the schools that host this sport are competitive, that schools like, I mean, I'll use Mississippi State as the example. They did not have a very good year, but they still qualified for the tournament on the back of, well, every week, week in, week out, they're playing a top 25 RPI team, because you can't avoid it in the SEC. And for Ole Miss to, this year they won a series against Tennessee. They won a series against Florida. They won these incredibly difficult series against some of the top teams in the country. And when that happens, you earn your host seat. I mean, I personally didn't anticipate them hosting. If you look at the RPI, if you look at the rankings, they were squarely in that 17 to 20 range, but they won in, and they made it on strength of schedule, and the committee obviously favored that over everything else.
We're talking with Nick Suss of the Clarion Ledger here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. He covers Ole Miss Rebels athletics. Nick, what will this softball team have to do, the Rebels, if they want to move on and advance to a super regional round and face the winner, whoever wins the Tucson regional?
Well, I think it comes down to if they need to use a third and fourth pitcher, they have to find some consistency there, and they have in the last 2 months of the season from some of their deeper in the rotation, deeper in the bullpen pitchers. And that's going to be huge for every team in regionals. But I think also Ole Miss, so if you've ever watched Ole Miss play softball, they are a very loud, very rambunctious team. Their dugout often sounds like what you would hear from a little league team. They're very chatty, very loud. They really feed off of that energy. And when you think about the crowds that you're going to get at the regional, they're talking about opening up the soccer complex and letting people sit on the bleachers and watch from in there. There's going to be record crowds. They've added extra seating for this weekend. There's going to be standing room crowds. And if this team that loves to chirp and cheer can get fed into by a crowd of 2,000, 3,000 people, I think that's going to be hard for certain other schools. I mean, UL might be used to it, but Chattanooga and Southeast Missouri, the other two schools in the regional, I don't know if they have played in environments quite like this one. So that might be a big, big factor for a team like Ole Miss that already uses energy so well to play into.
We're talking with Nick Suss of the Clarion Ledger here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Nick, let's switch over from softball to baseball. You and I were there both at Alex Box Stadium for Ole Miss to come into town and took 2 of 3 from LSU mm-hmm. for the first time since 1982. They did so in dramatic fashion after blowing that lead in the ninth inning. They were able to score 4 more runs. They get out of BR with a big win, 2 out of 3. But then they turn around and they got swept by Mississippi State. And now in the standings, LSU and Ole Miss, who are kind of tied at the hip here, are tied. And both of them have a lot on the line with their weekend series now, Ole Miss in Knoxville, LSU home against Auburn, for positioning for the SEC tournament. Where does it stand for Ole Miss baseball? What do they need to do in Knoxville against Tennessee?
Well, the main thing they need to do is remember how the bullpen works. Because, so, coming out of the LSU series, Ole Miss was 26-0 when leading after 6 innings this season. They are now 26-2 as they blew a lead against Mississippi State on Saturday. And then just on Tuesday, they blew a 4-0 eighth inning lead against Arkansas State. This is a team that was so solid in the bullpen for so long. But we really saw in that Sunday game, the Marathon 1915 game against LSU, we really started to see Ole Miss's bullpen start to falter. And since then, Parker Kuraisi, their preseason All-America closer, who was looking like he was going to have an All-America season until that LSU game, has seen his ERA go from 2.25 into the sixes. Ooh. Just over the span of 2 weeks. And Austin Miller, their hatchet man, the guy who had been the fireman for all season, he's given up 4 or 5 runs over the span, which is incredibly uncharacteristic. And you just go through the bullpen, they've got a couple of guys who they've thrown out there who just haven't gotten an out. They've had 3 or 4 instances where a pitcher goes out there, does not record an out, gives up 4 runs. Against Mississippi State, there was a point on Sunday where the Bulldogs had 9 straight batters score. It was just absolute anarchy from the bullpen. And Ole Miss really does need to correct that, because that was a strength of the team for so long, and the wheels have fallen off. But, I mean, beyond that, you saw firsthand, I think anyone in Baton Rouge saw firsthand, how well this team can hit when it's hitting. So I think they need to kind of rediscover that a little bit, find the power stroke, find the consistency. And, I mean, they've played most of the last 2 weeks without their starting center fielder, who is the leadoff guy, Ryan Oledick. So maybe getting him back will find some semblance of rhythm and consistency that they might be missing at the plate Because when this team hits, I think they hit as well as anyone in the conference. It's just a matter of finding that consistency that maybe they're missing.
Talking with Nick Suss of the Clarion Ledger here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Nick, we'll wrap it up with this. We saw what the potential is for this Ole Miss baseball team. Do you feel like they have what it takes to make a run in the SEC tournament in Hoover and get themselves hosting an NCAA regional?
Well, so over the last 5 years, there have been 23 SEC schools that have won 18 conference games. 22 of those 23 have hosted regionals. The only SEC school in the last 5 years that has hosted a regional without 18 conference wins was LSU back in 2014 when they made that run to win in Hoover. LSU and Ole Miss, as you said, are both sitting on 15 conference wins. If either of them get a sweep this weekend, LSU against Auburn, Ole Miss against Tennessee, it's going to be hard to deny them that host job just because 18 seems to be that magic number. That said, the way these two teams are playing right now, I think sweeps might be kind of out of the question. Both of these teams have struggled in the last 2 weeks. What's going to be interesting to see is, do these teams, which theoretically might have the deepest pitching staff in the West when it comes to amount of arms they can use in the bullpen, amount of different people who they trust to start, is that depth going to translate into ability? Because both LSU and Ole Miss have a lot of bodies, but are they the right bodies? Because they've really struggled at certain points this season. I think the SEC tournament comes down to pitching. I think regionals tend to come down to hitting. But when you have to play 5-6 games sometimes to get to that final in Hoover, you need a lot of arms. You need a lot of consistency. And do these schools have enough people they can count on? Right now, I don't know if the answer is yes for Ole Miss. But if you can hit and you can chase pitchers, you can go far in that tournament. This is an Ole Miss team that won it last year. They're a very experienced team. Most of the squad is returning from the team that won it last year. So we'll see. We'll see if they can make the run. I wouldn't be expecting it right now, but I also wouldn't be surprised.
Nick, appreciate you making time for us as always, brother. Enjoy the NCAA regional there in Oxford this weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, glad to do it, man.
It's Nick Suss, Clarion Ledger, Ole Miss beat reporter, joining us there on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, giving us a little insight into the Ole Miss softball program, who's hosting the Oxford Regional, which the Raging Cajuns are taking part in starting tomorrow, as well as a little Ole Miss baseball talk, too, because they're in the kind of the same boat as LSU. Find themselves needing to get at least 2 of 3 wins here to get to that magic number heading into the SEC tournament to be able to possibly host a regional. Good stuff. When we come back, we will close out shop here on RP3 and Company right after this break on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1, as well as 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. Had a terrific show today. I want to thank all of our guests. John Marcase from the Town Talk and thetowntalk.com coming on, talking a little Pelicans with us in LSU baseball. Want to give a special thanks to Summer Ellison, the UL Raging Cajun starting pitcher, making some time for us. As well, James Yasko from the Lima Time Time podcast, Les East from Crescent City Sports, breaking down more Pels lottery talk, and then Nick Suss giving us the perspective from the host team at the Oxford Regional that UL is playing in for softball this weekend, the Ole Miss Rebels. So thank you for everyone that came on the show today. Reminder, the good brother Ben Love, that's right, host of Bumper to Bumper Sports, you love the show, as you should. He will be broadcasting live, as always, from the Tap Room at River Ranch today from 4 to 6 o'clock. He's going to lead you in to LSU pregame. Opening game of the Auburn series is tonight. Pregame show starts at 6 right here on 103.7 The Game, followed by first pitch at 6:30. Also,
it's very important that I get this T-ball game handled up, taken care of within proper time constraints so we can do this.
That's right.
Hashtag. T-ball starts at 6. I'm hoping it's over by 6:50, and Cody only misses about an inning and a half.
Hashtag first world problems for you, Cody Schutz.
They are, but we'll live either way.
I'm hoping for you as well.
I'll be standing in front of second base waiting for some other little kid to hit the ball with my phone in my hand. Just watching.
You know what's going to happen? Some kid's going to just knock the hell out of the ball. It's going to knock your phone out of your hand.
I'm too athletic for that, Raymond. That'll never happen.
Oh, I'm like a puma. No. Cody Schutz, the puma. That's what I'm going to
say. So the PC Rec Cubbies coming back strong tonight after a rainout at the end of last week. So, you know.
Damn you, weather.
I know, but they'll come back. They're ready. They're well rested.
So we're going to come home. The hard. Cubbies will get is it practice or a game?
Tonight? Oh, it's a game.
Okay.
Oh, it's game time.
So I'm calling it now. You ready for this? I'm calling it now. The PC.
PC Rec. Yeah.
The PC Rec Cubbies.
Yeah.
They're going to get the W.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to fly. You're going to fly the flag. You're going to fly the flag today.
It's a lowercase W because they're little kids.
They're little. And then you're going to go home and you're going to celebrate a Tigers win versus those team that can't figure out what the hell they are. Tigers, Plainsmen,
War Eagles,
whatever they are.
The answer to your question is like 50-50, yes and no, because one of those things is more likely to happen than the other.
The PC Rec Cubbies is more likely, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Spoken like a true LSU fan. Spoken like a true LSU fan.
That'll do it.
That will do it. Reminder, just keep it live and local all day here today. Jeff Horchak, our good buddy. That's right. He's bound for Monroe soon, but not so fast. He'll be filling in for Uncle Jordy today from 2 to 4. Then the good brother Ben Love live from the tap room at River Ranch from 4 to 6. LSU pregame at 6 and then first pitch at 6:30. Coming up next, the sport of politics with a special guest. That's right, UFC champ Dustin the Diamond Poirier will be joining them live in studio. Stay tuned for that. Y'all have a great day. Talk to you tomorrow.